action, we would find out that we are actually sharing our faith and helping in the spread of Christianity as well. This morning we continue our series of sermons based on questions that Jesus asked in the Gospels. Those questions are still valid today. They still strike at the heart and cause us to reflect. And today's question, I think, will be no exception. This question appears in many forms throughout the Bible, and this particular story occurs as well in different Gospels. In fact, there's a version of it in each of the three synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and even a parallel version later in the Gospel of Matthew. I've chosen Matthew's version, but I'll be referring to Mark's version a little bit later in the message. And here's how Matthew describes it in chapter 8 of his gospel. Then Jesus got into the boat, and his disciples with him. Without warning, a furious storm came up on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat, but Jesus was asleep. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us, we're going to drown." He replied, "You of little faith, why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." Well, we're talking about fear today, and that seems to be a good topic. I know it's a topic I think about quite often, like every morning when I have to get out of bed, I find something to be afraid of, and fear seems to be something that's in large supply these days. There seem to be a lot of things that people are afraid of, and there seem to be a lot of people who like to remind us of what we have to be afraid of. Politicians remind us of our fears so that we will vote for them, and so we will despise the other candidate. Madison Avenue types remind us of the things that we are afraid of in the hopes that we will buy their products, so we won't need to be so afraid. And goodness knows there are a lot of things we can be afraid of. High gas prices. I heard someone say that the news reporters say it might go up to $7 a gallon. High food prices. When the gas prices go up, so do the food prices. And when we use a lot of our corn for ethanol, then the corn prices go up too. The other crops go up in price because people aren't planting as many of them because they're planting more of the corn so that more of the corn can go to fuel. And meanwhile, people seem to forget that we use these things for food as well. Of course, at various times over the last several years, we've been more or less afraid of terrorism. And we've discovered there can be all kinds of terrorism. There is international terrorism. There is also more local terrorism. Some neighborhoods would make you afraid to drive through them, let alone to live in them. And unfortunately, all too many people live in the midst of terrorism in their own homes. Of course, we all have health concerns. And we're reminded regularly of how many sicknesses we can contract, of how many deadly conditions might put us in the grave, of how soon we might die or how long we might live, and then that raises other things to be afraid of. This past week, many people have been afraid of the weather, especially in other parts of the country. I imagine the people of Iowa are sort of not even looking at the sky anymore. They're so tired of seeing dark clouds and rain. Anyone who looks ahead to the future is bound to be afraid. The future of our world, the future of our earth, the future of our country, even the future of our state and county are sources of fear. And most of these things, of course, we can't do a darn thing about, and that's one reason we're so afraid. We like to think that if we have control over something, we don't need to be afraid. And unfortunately, all too often, we're reminded that there really is nothing that we have that much control over, that we don't need to be afraid of something happening in that area of our lives. Last week, Tammy and I went up to Owego to spend a day or two with Matt. We went to the Strawberry Festival in Owego. When it comes to strawberries, I'll cross state lines to get some if I have to. So that's what we did. We went up there and walked into town and mingled with the 20,000 people that were in Owego for the Strawberry Festival. Looked at each other and said, I thought we didn't like crowds, but there we were. We sampled some of the strawberry shortcake, and I had a nice big juicy chocolate-covered strawberry. And there in the park was a guy who had set up a booth. He had a place across the river where you could go for massage treatments, like a spa. And so he's offering 10-minute massages for $10. And I'm not used to spending $10 on anything, but I got talked into it. So there I was, sitting at his booth with my head in a donut, being forced into the ground by his working on my back. And of course, he's very good at what he does, and he's very comfortable doing it, and so he knows one thing he needs to do is make me comfortable at it too, and so he strikes up a conversation with me. And of course, the first question he asks, you can guess, what do you do for a living? I hate that question. I'll be talking with someone, we'll have a nice conversation, and they'll say, what do you do for a living? I'll say, I'm a pastor. All of a sudden, that's it. Well, see you later. But fortunately, that didn't intimidate him. He said, oh, what church? So I told him. And he said, well, I go to the Nazarene Church here. And I said, oh, they're the ones that built our building. So we had a common bond there. He grew up as a Lutheran. He's going to a Nazarene church. The Nazarenes built our building, and I'm a Lutheran, so you can't get any closer than that. And as he was working on me, he says, you know, I have several pastors that come to me for massages. I have a fellow head of the Catholic diocese who comes down from Syracuse, and that's about two-hour drive from there. Whenever he comes through, he stops in. He says, I find out, I can always tell what day of the week it is when I'm giving them a massage, because if it's Monday or Tuesday, they're real relaxed, they're talkative. If it's Friday or maybe Saturday, they're all tensed up. They don't have a whole lot to say. He said, do you know what the one thing most people fear more than anything else? Public speaking. Standing in front of a crowd and talking. He said, apparently these pastors have that problem because as it gets closer and closer to Sunday, they get more and more tense. And then he says, I have to work all that out of them. Public speaking, number one fear. Made me remember an episode from Peanuts that I saw one time in a comic strip, and then they also had this in the Christmas special that they've had on for about 500 years. Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, or whatever it is. Charlie Brown is walking along and he sees Lucy's little psychiatry shop set up. Advice, 5 cents. So he goes and sits on a chair and they're talking back and forth. And she said, what's the problem, Charlie Brown? Are you afraid? You know, there's lots of things to be afraid of. Are you afraid of heights? She said, the important thing is to be able to label it, because if you can label it, then you can treat it. Maybe you have acrophobia, that's fear of heights. Or maybe you have arachnophobia, that's fear of spiders. Do you have fear of spiders? No, I'm not afraid of spiders. You could have triskaidekaphobia, that's fear of the number 13. And I'm thinking, they have little kids reading this dialogue. How'd they ever get this kid to say the word triskaidekaphobia? But she did. She said, maybe you have pantophobia. Do you think you might have pantophobia, Charlie Brown? And Charlie Brown says, well, what is pantophobia? She says, that's fear of everything. And Charlie Brown says, that's it! That's what I have, fear of everything. And Charlie Brown speaks for us. Most of us manage our fears very well. In fact, there are several of us who would say we're not afraid of anything. But if there's someone who knows us well enough and they know which buttons to press, it quickly becomes obvious that there are things we are afraid of. This morning I came in, turned the lights on, that bulb was burned out. I thought, okay, got to go downstairs, get the ladder, come up with the light bulb and replace the bulb. I'm not afraid of anything. I can handle this. I get the ladder out and I put it up straddling the pews there. I got the bulb in one hand and I'm climbing up the ladder. First step was okay. Second step wasn't too bad, but I needed to go up 3 steps to reach the bulb. And that third step, with one hand holding on to the fixture and the other hand trying to get the bulb in, I'm not going to tell people I'm not afraid of heights. God has a way of humbling us by reminding us of what we're afraid of. I'm not really afraid of health problems. The reason being, I've never had too many. But a couple years ago, when I went to the doctor and he reminded me of my advancing years, and told me there were certain procedures that I should have done regularly once I passed that threshold. And he did a test for my prostate at the same time that 3 or 4 of our members were being treated for prostate cancer. And I came back and he told me the number had jumped considerably and he wanted me to go to the urologist. And so I went and he said, we're going to do a biopsy. I'm starting to think, now wait a minute. This isn't what I bargained for. And by the time I went back for the biopsy, God had shown me that I have no right to say to anyone that I'm not afraid of health problems. I'm not afraid of health problems I don't have. I am afraid of health problems I might have. And I don't think God needs to show me I'd be terrified of health problems I do have. Yes, unfortunately, fear is something that we will all have to deal with sooner or later. And this morning's message talks directly about fear. That's one thing that God teaches us right off the bat. If you want to deal with the problem, you have to confront the problem. You can't deal with the problem by saying you don't have it. And you can't deal with the problem by saying you can handle it. You deal with the problem by facing the problem. Alcoholics Anonymous has discovered that the first step in healing for alcoholism and for any other addiction is to admit, I have a problem that I can't handle. And I need to turn to a source more powerful than myself, what they call a higher power, and what Christian AA groups say is turning to God Himself. And so in this morning's lesson, Jesus confronts the fear of his disciples. And it really is an interesting story when you look at it. Jesus gets into the boat. It's a boat that belongs to one of his disciples, because at least 4 of the disciples are fishermen. 4 of his disciples, at least, are fishermen. And they are the most bold of the disciples, Peter, James, John, and Andrew, the ones who are the most forthright, the ones who are the quickest to stand up for Jesus in the Gospels. These 4 are fishermen. It's no wonder to me that it's the fishermen who were so bold, because they deal with the lake all the time. You know what my number one fear is? Not public speaking, it's fear of drowning. I do not like the possibility of not being able to breathe anything but water. When I was in high school, we used to have a pool class along with gym class. Had a nice little swimming pool. And we'd all go in, we'd have to learn to tread water, we'd have to learn to swim laps and so on. The second year I was there, we got a new pool teacher. And what he used to do was he would have us all get in our swimsuits and get in the water, then he would go over to the office with the gym teacher and they'd watch the films of last week's football game because they were both football coaches. And he didn't really care for swimming. Well, there was a fellow in my pool class who decided it was his job to get me over my fear of water. And so every time we got in the pool, as soon as the teacher would leave, he would chase me around the pool with the idea that if he caught me, he'd dunk me under the water. I surprised him, and I think I even surprised myself, at how well I could move in the water when properly motivated. One time he caught me by the side of the pool, and he's a wrestler. And he was heavier than I was, so he's in a higher weight class anyway, and there he is trying to pull me away from the side of the pool, and I'm wrapped onto the side of the pool for dear life. No way you're going to get me off this side of the pool. Finally, he gave up. He says, "Dave, you know I'm not going to hurt you." I said, "Yeah, I know. I just don't like the water." Fear of drowning is a big one for me. And apparently it was a big one for several of the disciples. And perhaps the most surprising thing of all, I think fear of drowning must have been a big one even for the fishermen. Here you have a boat owned by one of the disciples. Four of the disciples are fishermen. Jesus shows no concern at all. He's sleeping in the bow of the boat. Now that's one I'd like to learn. How I can't sleep through thunderstorms. And there he is on a boat in the middle of a lake, in the middle of a storm, and he's sleeping. And they have to wake him up. Here are fishermen who are trained to deal with all the problems that may come up on a boat in the middle of the lake. A storm comes up and they're afraid. If they are afraid, I'm sure I'd be afraid. And I'm sure everyone on that boat who was not a fisherman was terrified. In fact, one of the Gospels in relating the story, the Gospel of Mark, even says it was a furious squall. And the waves were breaking over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples woke him up and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Don't you care? Then Jesus got up and he calmed the storm and he said, "Why are you so afraid?" The disciples weren't concerned for Jesus' life. They probably figured if God had to, he'd save Jesus by a miracle. But they didn't consider themselves so lucky. Jesus would survive the storm, but they might drown. I sometimes wonder how they might have responded to Jesus' question. "Why are you so afraid?" In Matthew's Gospel, Jesus asks that question before he calms the storm. The wind is blowing and howling. Maybe there's lightning and thunder. The waves are rolling. The ship is going back and forth. Water's filling the boat. And Jesus stands there perfectly calm. "Why are you afraid?" I can imagine Peter, the impulsive, confident Peter the fisherman, saying to Jesus, "Why are we afraid? Take a look. Why aren't you afraid?" Peter is scared. And he's used to dealing with this. But he's afraid. Jesus says, "Why are you afraid?" And I can hear the disciples saying, "Don't we have reason to be?" When we hear Jesus' message, and we relate it to the storms in our lives, the times when we feel like we're being swamped by the demands of life, knocked over by unexpected tragedies. We come to Jesus in prayer and we hear Jesus saying through the scriptures, "Why are you so afraid?" We too would like to say, "Well, Jesus, look at my life. Just look at me and the circumstances in which I live. Wouldn't you be afraid?" But then Jesus links the fear with its real cause. For Jesus, the real cause of the disciples' fear is not the storm. It's not the waves. It's not the water. The beginning, the kernel of their fear, is the thought expressed in Mark's Gospel. When the disciples wake Jesus and they say to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown? I'm one who does not handle physical sickness very well. You can ask Tammy. If I get a cold," she talks about staying with her mom for a few days because I'm a bear to live with. I give the attitude, "Just let me alone until I either recover or die. Just let me go. I don't like being sick. When I do get sick," I hesitate to say this because I have not struggled with the sicknesses that many of you have, "but when I do get sick, I hear myself saying exactly what the disciples are saying. I turn to God in prayer, and if after 2 minutes the sickness doesn't leave me, I say, 'God, don't you care that I'm suffering? Don't you care that I'm in agony? And I'm putting everyone around me in agony as well. Don't you care that I'm on the verge of dying?'" And I can just hear God saying, "Why are you so afraid?" And if God were wearing a shirt, I'd want to grab him by the shirt and say, "Look at me. I'm in agony. How can you ask me why am I afraid?" And then invariably what God will do is he'll have the phone ring and I'll answer the phone and someone will say, "Pastor Dave, would you call the prayer list for so-and-so? They just found out they have cancer." And all of a sudden it puts my sickness in perspective. God has a way of doing that. He has a way of taking the issues that seem so monumental to us, so overwhelming, and putting them in perspective. Someone once told me the way they deal with fear is by talking themselves through it something like this. They're in a situation. They're afraid. They say to themselves, "Okay, what are the best and worst possible outcomes? The best outcome is the problem will go away, then I have nothing to worry about. The worst outcome is that it'll get worse, then I have something to worry about. If it gets worse, there's two possibilities. I could still get better, in which case I have nothing to worry about. Or I could die, in which case I've got something to worry about. Because if I die, I'll either go to heaven or I'll go to hell. If I go to heaven, I've got nothing to worry about. If I go to hell, I'll be so busy greeting my friends, I won't have time to worry." Well, I don't quite agree with the last part of that. But I would say that in an eternal perspective, if we can manage to keep ourselves focused on what really matters, there is nothing that would lead us to fear if we were firmly grounded and confident that God loved us. The real question at stake here is the question the disciples asked Jesus. "Don't you care if we drown?" That question, "Don't you care?" was asked by another person in the Gospels too. You remember the story? Mary and Martha. Mary sitting at Jesus' feet and Martha busying herself trying to make dinner for Jesus and his disciples. How would you like it if 13 guys suddenly crashed your house and expected dinner of all things? And she's hustling and bustling and there's her sister Mary sitting at Jesus' feet and Jesus is putting up with it. So she goes up to Jesus, Martha does, and she says, "Don't you care that I have to do all this work by myself while my sister just sits there?" That's the real question, isn't it? Does God care or doesn't he? Jesus was convinced that God cared for him. Jesus was convinced that God had given him a mission and a purpose, and that nothing would happen to him until that mission was fulfilled. Several times the crowds tried to grab Jesus and arrest him or kill him on the spot, and yet Jesus managed to elude them every time. He showed no fear at all. He was convinced God would take care of him. John the Baptist was the same way. He proclaimed things boldly from the banks of the Jordan River. He said things that made kings quake in their palaces. And yet he spoke boldly because he knew God had given him a purpose. There was a task for him to do. Once Jesus had been identified, John knew that his task was completed and he was ready to accept whatever future God would give him. And even when he was put in prison, he showed no signs of fear. He showed reluctance maybe to have to deal with the physical pains that would be caused to him. But he was totally at peace with whatever the future would bring. He told his disciples, "Yes, this is why I came. To announce the coming of Jesus, to prepare the way. I have prepared the way. He has come. Now my task is over. He will increase, I will decrease." When we're certain that we are living the path that God has marked out for us, there is no need to fear. Because we know that whatever may happen will be a part of God's purpose, will be used by Him to achieve His own glory. And that will be all that matters to us. I got a new study Bible last week, a Reformation study Bible, with notes in it that are geared from a Reformation, a Reformed perspective. And I started reading it, and I got to the story of Abram and Lot, where both of them were getting so many flocks that there wasn't enough ground for them all, and their servants were starting to fight with each other. And so Abram takes Lot to a hillside, and he says, "Now look around here. We shouldn't be fighting with each other. We're a family. So you look around here. Wherever you want to go, you go one way, I'll go the other. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right." And there was a note at the bottom of the page. So I went down to the bottom of the page, and it said this. It said, "Abram was so convinced of the sovereignty of God, that is, that God is in control of all things, and all things work together for the playing out of his plan. Abram was so convinced in the sovereignty of God that he could afford to be generous. Instead of him saying, 'Now, Lot, I'm going this way, you go that way,' Abram gave Lot the choice. 'You choose, whichever way you want.' Of course, Lot looked and he says, 'Oh, nice valley over there, rugged hills over here. I think I'll go here.' So he went there and Abram went there. Next thing you knew, that whole valley's in fire and brimstone as God destroys the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboiim. Meanwhile, up in the hills, Abram is getting richer as time goes on. Abram was so convinced of the sovereignty of God, he could afford to be generous. I'd like to have that faith. I'd like to have a faith in God that believed that God was so powerful that if something was absolutely necessary for the working out of his plan, he would do it. I'd like to believe in a God so personal that he has a plan for my life, and that if I follow him, he will prosper my way. I'd like to believe in a God who loves me so much that he would take a personal interest in the storms that enter into my life. I read the gospel lesson, I hear Jesus say to the disciples, "Why are you afraid?" And I remember that this is the same Jesus who faced trial, scourging, crown of thorns, death on a cross for me. And I say to myself, maybe God does love me. Maybe he does love me enough that he has a purpose for my life. Even when it seems to those around me that there's not a whole lot I can do. Maybe God still has a work for me to do. Maybe God does love me, and even if storms come into my life, those storms will give him glory and strengthen and deepen my faith. I look at the disciples and I can't really get a better example of what to do when I'm afraid than what the disciples did. After all, when they were afraid, what did they do? They woke Jesus up. They said, "Help." Sometimes when I go to God in prayer, it feels like I have to wake him up. I know I don't. That's just my human weakness speaking, but it feels that way. And when I do, I hear him say, "Why are you so afraid? Didn't you think I knew that this was coming? Didn't you think that I could handle it when it did come?" The real question is, don't you think that I have confidence in you to be able to handle it as well? The disciples were already doing the right thing. They had come to Jesus. Now all that they needed to do was turn that fear into confidence, and they could stand. As we see them in the gospel lesson, they are cowering behind Jesus. They're saying, "Save us, protect us." But Jesus is inviting them to stand beside him, to face the storm boldly, and to know that as long as we are beside him, as long as we're standing by his side, we really do have nothing to fear. When Jesus says to the disciples, "Why are you so afraid?" what he's trying to say to them is, you already have the resources that you need. Don't grab on to them in fear. Lay hold of them in faith. Jesus calmed the storm. The disciples looked around amazed and they said, "Who is this? That even the wind and the waves obey him." And so perhaps for us, the question Jesus asks, "Why are you so afraid?" needs to be followed up in our own minds by the question the disciples ask. Just who is this Jesus in whom we believe? Maybe we can dare to hope that he really can provide everything we need, a calming of the storm or a calming of the soul. Standing beside Jesus, we can face any crisis, as all of the disciples eventually did, every one of them but John, dying violently because of his faith. John being imprisoned and exiled on the island of Patmos. They eventually faced storms worse than that storm on the Sea of Galilee. And yet they had come to know who this Jesus was in whom they believed. Who this Jesus was that they had given up everything for. And they had come to the conclusion that as long as I stand beside Jesus, I don't need to cower in fear. His grace indeed will be sufficient for my every need. Heavenly Father, we pray that as we face the storms of life, we might have the faith of the disciples, a faith that was strong enough to point them in the right direction, even if once they came to Jesus, they were still cowering, at least they had come to the right place. Help us, like them, to become reacquainted with who this Jesus really is, to be convinced of the love that he has for each one of us, to seek his will for our lives, and to live in confidence as we serve him and are a blessing to others. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Would the ushers please come forward for the offering?